famed author Clive Cussler.
The hero, Dirk Pitt.
It was a foolproof method of murder. He forced open the mouth and began probing. He was relieved to see that the premier had not wet himself. The faint smell of his maleness aroused her again.
Night Probe, Episode 5, Quebecsit.
How have you been? You are so blurry. So you're just all blurry. It's like I'm talking to a mythical creature that can't be caught on film, unblurry.
Well, I am the Sasquatch, so that does track.
Now you're Nessie. You're Nessie. You just retired.
Not bad. I've been sick for the last 2 weeks. It's just like a really low-level sniffle sore throat thing.
Okay.
Not made better by the fact that I've been to 2 metal shows in 2 nights.
No, you probably catch a lot of things at metal shows. If everybody's screaming, that's a lot of droplets being
spittle
forcibly spewed at other people.
The trick is you have to drink enough alcohol that it kills the germs.
I have always thought that about, like, when you're eating something iffy, you're like, oh, this might kill my stomach. I better drown this with vodka.
This is a really small venue. Like, it's a one-room art gallery. Most of the week, they have, like, open mic nights for jazz music. And they have coffee shop seminars in there, but it's also where most of the metal shows happen in town. A lot of nights lately, they just have basically a mystery keg that they get from one of the local breweries. And last night it was peach tea from Trench Brewing. And I asked how much alcohol was in it. And they was like, we have no idea. $5? Want one? Would you like this mystery liquor?
How was it?
It was good. After two of them, I decided it was very high alcohol content.
Oh, I see. It sounds sweet. The sweet stuff can sneak up on you.
It wasn't that sweet, actually. It was just like mild peach tea.
Oh, so you didn't even taste like a burn? Nothing?
No.
Huh?
The faintest burn. And I was like, oh, there's not much in this. And I finished my two, and I'm like, okay, there's something in that.
I was 18, and a friend of mine, we went to TJ Fridays to get Long Island iced teas. Because they didn't card. And we were like, oh, this is... Like, it's alcohol. It's going to be all the alcohol. We're going to do it. And I was like, this doesn't taste like anything. Like, a Long Island iced tea from TGI Fridays. Children, if you're listening, tastes exactly like soda. You get it in the middle of a burn. It's
outstanding.
A really easy way. And I was like, this isn't doing anything. And then we left. It was a hot day, so we left the air-conditioned restaurant out into the parking lot, and we couldn't feel our legs. I felt like Hunter.
Excellent.
I felt like Hunter S. Thompson. I was totally just made of no bones.
We were somewhere around Barstow, on the edge of the desert, when the drugs began to take hold.
Perfect. I think the last time I was that boneless or legless or whatever the term is, was my friend Greg's bachelor party, and that must have been almost 20 years ago. And that was back when they had Buck Pill. So it was a $1 12-ounce Pilsner. And for an extra buck, they would drop a shot of Jaeger into it. So for $2.
That's safety last. Oh my God.
Shake hands with danger.
And everybody was just tossing them back because they didn't taste like anything.
And nickel beer night. It's a great idea. And it's a bad idea. like a ski mask, as they say.
It's not good beer. But after 4 or 5, you don't care.
So I can credit Adam Carolla, who's not the funniest, but not the most unfunny. Is it ski mask, the most controversial product in history. Done more bad than good.
Ooh, my wife just knit me one.
Whoa, that's nice.
That I said I would only use for bank robberies occasionally.
I was with my daughter in the mall the other day, and I saw a ski mask on a mannequin, and I was like, ooh, ski mask. And I told her what I just told you. And I was like, I've always wanted one, so when I'm ready when I have to rob a bank. And she's like, oh, when are you going to rob a bank? I'm like, someday I'm definitely robbing a bank.
Bank robberies will make a comeback, I swear.
I can't wait. If after 75, I'll bet you off I'm doing whatever I want.
Hell yes. Send me to jail. I don't care. Have you learned your lesson? No.
I stopped a man the other day. I often have tone problem and I have resting angry face. Even though I'm not angry, I just look mean.
You and my wife would get along great.
It's just, I'll have to like giggle and constantly force myself to smile. Russ, it looks like I just murdered puppies. And I remembered your friend told you she liked how you shaved your head. I'm like, okay. Men really don't get enough compliments. I always go out of my way to compliment women if I see them wearing a coat they like or if their hair is like perfect. I saw a guy with a really nice sweater. So I go up to him at Target. I'm like, your sweater. I love your sweater. It looks great. But I didn't adjust my tone. So it came across like I was yelling at him. And this guy was older and terrified.
Your fucking sweater's great.
He was like, are you taking it? No. I'm not taking your sweater. He thought I was robbing him.
I like your sweater. Give it to me.
I need your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle.
I was trying to do something good, but horribly bad.
All right, should we dive into this nonsense?
We should, and it is your turn to do the introduction.
Welcome to Cussler Hustlers, the only Clive Cussler podcast that has two brand new microphones.
That is true. We have two gorgeous microphones. And I see I've put in three chandeliers to really make this room pop and make it effective for podcasting. I see you've done the same.
Plants and windows.
Oh, yes. Welcome, everyone. I'm the Nancy part of your hosting experience here.
And I'm the topper half. Because of the last few days, I really didn't feel up to having a beer with this record, so it's energy drink day.
But, Brent, what's worse for you, a beer or an energy drink? I'm not a health nut.
Just rock star. I'm trying to quit. I really have to cut down. I've gone from real coffee to decaf in the mornings, but every now and then, like the last few nights, I've gotten no sleep. I've been sick, so I didn't get any sleep during the week. A couple of energy drinks just to get the brain working.
I use Adderall. It's very effective. But I have a sleep disorder, so otherwise I'm awake or I'm using the very effective stuff.
I have Adderall too, but it doesn't work for me.
It doesn't keep you awake. Wow.
It does, I guess. I mean, have I ranted about this with my doctor? I went to him to get a adult ADHD diagnosis for me and for my oldest because he has a childhood ADHD diagnosis. And my doctor was like, absolutely, and just prescribed us this. Not what we asked for. We asked for a referral to get tested, not here's drugs. And all it does for me is make me eat more. All it does for my son is it makes him stop eating. We notice no other changes.
Really? Okay.
Our focus does not improve. I'm just as much of a squirrel on them as off of them.
My focus has not improved. I am getting tested soon for a memory loss, which is terrifying, but they think it's just my age and I'm a woman and it's nature taking me out of the mating pool, and that happens to some women. And I'm like, but my brain has fallen out. Sometimes I can't remember where I am. They're like, oh no, that's normal.
I'm in that zone too. I'm worried like I'm getting that long COVID brain fog thing because I swear I just can't remember stuff as well as I used to like a couple of years ago.
I've noticed a lot of people complaining about it. But I figured it's like when you buy a new car, then you see it everywhere. I figured it was kind of like that bias.
Why does everybody who takes bath salts want to eat people?
I think it's just like when you buy a certain car, you start seeing that car on the road.
That's a very good point.
There's people eating people all over the place. It's just everyone's hot on eating people.
So cannibalism's like the Mini Cooper?
This bunch of chapters is very Quebecian. I think we go to chapter 28 is where we start. And it's very exciting. I don't mean to...
Yes. This might be the most fun and insane chapter in the book so far.
Yes, and Clive Cussler discovers he does, as I alluded to last week, he loves Rococo architecture. The way he talks about, and the dusty rounded tiles and the stucco, rough stuff. It's Rococo. One word. Does it all.
And the big wooden beams that run all the way through the house.
Sounds lovely. And this is Graham Humberley's house.
Hello, I'm Graham Humberley.
Anyway, Graham is dressed fantastic. He is just like a fixer guy, and he's having a great dinner party.
The Rolls-Royce salesman that Brian Shaw was supposed to meet up with in California.
He answers the door to Brian Shaw, and this guy, Graham, is wearing a silk dinner jacket with a dragon embroidered on the back. And that reminds me of the people walking around with like wolf t-shirts all the time. Like, you really have to be into dragons to have a special embroidered jacket. He invites Brian Shaw in. Brian Shaw, if you remember, is the kind of aged hitman, just all in black.
Old man James Bond, and in your mind, he looks like Clive Owen.
Yes. Thank you. I'd forgotten. I turned him into a little bit of a young Clint Eastwood this time.
Wow, he's just bouncing around Hollywood there.
They don't discuss how he's dressed, so I suppose it's not as silky or vibrant.
Yeah, so there is this naval party happening, because I guess Graham Humberley is like a mover and shaker. They don't exactly explain why, but there are a lot of naval officers at this party, including Heidi.
Yes, Heidi. And there's always people like this. The person everybody knows.
Yeah.
Who has the parties. I totally buy that. That just happens. People gravitate towards the fun party guys, even if they're not in their bailiwick, their workplace, whatever. I could totally see a guy who sells fancy cars being a fancy party guy that would be the invitation to seek. And at this party, Heidi is looking fantastic. Brian Shaw zooms in on her. He wordlessly kidnaps Heidi, and she just goes along with it.
Yeah, I did have a few notes on that. So Heidi is talking with some other naval officer, and Brian Shaw walks up and like asks if he could intrude. And the other naval guy is like, fuck off, Grandpa. And then Brian Shaw says that he's an admiral and maybe you should be a little bit nicer. And the other guy immediately freaks out and apologizes. He's like, yeah, whatever, go away. But then he just spots Heidi and he's like, hey, would you come away with me right now?
Hello, Marge. I'm Lee Majors. Will you come away with me?
Sure.
We never go to a second location.
I have second location written down in bold letters. Second location.
That's the ladies from My Favorite Murder have told us all never go to a second location.
Yep. He borrows a red Rolls Royce Corniche convertible. Dirk is really loving the cars in this book.
Shit. There was a Rolls Royce convertible. I always see them as hard tops in my head or something Nazi adjacent. They love the Rolls Royces.
No, the Rolls Royce Corniche convertible actually kind of like, in my mind, looks like a Bentley, but yeah, soft top. It's a nice looking car.
It sounds beautiful. I will look it up. But I just can't get over Heidi is at a party. She's talking to people. This guy just puts his hand on the sole of her back. And she's like, let's get out of town. And they go to a hotel and they get right to it, to the room. Yeah.
There is a small aside where they're on the San Diego freeway. They're just roaring along, like several multiples of the speed limit with the top down. I have written down Heidi's an idiot, but she is exhilarated and squeezing his arm. And Shaw even says it's an old Scottish ploy. Abduct females to distant places so they must feign interest in you. So he tells her he's kidnapping her.
Yeah, that's an old romance novel trope where all of the romance novels that are generally popular are Regency era, where the women have long gowns that are tied just below the breast line, and they, like Bridgerton.
Yes.
Everything is like that. In that time, a young man would whisk you away on horseback and take you over the border to Gretna Green, where you didn't need a parent's permission to marry. So they just basically grab women and go marry them in Gretna Green. It is an old Scottish tactic. But she just goes along with it willingly. This is really indicative of a more trustworthy time.
Yep.
Why would I be antsy? I might go with it. I might be like, today's the last night. Maybe this guy is really old hot. Maybe.
He must be. But also it is Heidi. Don't forget, like, she already has the well-established record of loving older naval men. Extremely older naval men. And Brian Shaw's done his research. He says he's an admiral. He's not. And he also says that he writes historical naval books, just like Heidi does. And she's like, oh, I do that too. That's so great. We have so much in common. The very next line is, Heidi orders room service in the morning.
Hey, order room service in Heidi's voice. Go ahead. What is she getting? Do the Heidi voice again.
I don't remember what she ordered.
Eggs Benedict. And champagne and strawberries.
Strawberries and Eggs Benedict. But my next notes are bonkers because her and Shaw are talking. And we go through her body count in that everyone she's ever slept with for no apparent reason. And then they spend a lot of time talking about how good the female orgasm is compared to the men's.
Which is interesting, because how do you compare? You can't.
And he ends that whole stretch with, a woman demands more. much more, too much.
Are we serious?
Is he complaining?
You go on the internet and women stay with men who don't have jobs or take out the garbage. Women do, according to Reddit, this is not the case. Women do not demand anything. The orgasm thing, fine. Whatever, Clive's feeling saucy.
I'm a modern male.
You never understand another person's lived experience, Clive, so dial it back. And Brian Shaw's like, with the historical fiction and historical writing, he doesn't even have to torture Heidi, and he's relieved.
Yes.
He's like, oh, good to just kiss her again, and we'll go back to the bedroom. Torture needed. What an easy gig.
I guess he was ready to, yeah. So I guess as they're eating their breakfast, she asks him about the North American treaty. She's like, oh, you're a elderly British/Scottish naval man. Have you ever heard of the North American treaty, this obscure document from 1914 that I can't find any record of? And he says, yeah, but it's boring. You don't need to know about that. But she freaks out. She's like, oh my God, you've heard of it. Yay. And so he asked her for all of her notes. And she's like, oh, I turned them over to a friend. Okay, what's her name? No, it's his name. It's Dirk Pitt. Okay, what's his address? And he's asking a lot of really direct, confusing questions. And she's like, okay, yeah, here's all the information you need.
Being very short, and she's not picking it up at all. She's like, no. Oh, this is totally normal conversation. Why do you want this person's name? Okay.
Here's all the plot information so I can be removed from the book. Goodbye.
Maybe she was just happily terrified, which is a thing. Hiking once, and they came across a guy with his dog, and he scared the bejesus out of me. And my daughter and a baby Bjorn, and he was like, your daughter looks so pretty. Like, just his tone and demeanor made me go the other way out of fear. Like, oh, I'm so happy to see you in the woods. You look like a great guy. Here, have some gummy. I gave him all my snacks. It's like, please don't murder me, Woodman.
And then having this face attached to this giant freakish body, I just know that there's certain things I can never do that normal people can get away with, you know? Also, if I'm at a mall and I see a family, I can never go, cute kid.
Yeah, sometimes.
But I'm just saying, maybe she's so cooperative because she's terrified. I don't get that vibe, but I'm trying to be generous here. And boy, is she stupid if not. This was a time of people just hitchhiking, like it was a normal way to live.
It was the 70s/80s.
Yeah, it was a different time, and people just traded STIs like it was nothing.
And I know she's on layover. From,
is she ever? Yes.
from her naval posting for 3 days. But is she really allowed to go AWOL to like a completely different city?
You can. My sister was in the armed services. And if you're off, you're off. You just have to be back on the base like the minute.
Okay.
You're AWOL if you're not there when they call your name.
That makes sense. Okay. Carry on, Heidi. You go, girl.
Now, if there's a huge event like 9/11 or something, you're going to be called back, and that might make things tricky, depending on how far you strayed. And this brings us to Chapter 29. We're outside of Quebec. It's 3 degrees Celsius. That's 37.4 degrees Fahrenheit. Since I'm too bad, 3 degrees Celsius makes it seem egregious, like totally unreasonable.
When you're on the water and it's windy, that sucks.
Oh, I believe it. And we come to Jules Demont. He's the Empress of Ireland expert.
Yes.
And he compares the Empress of Ireland, which, for listeners, this is a reminder at the beginning, the boat, the ship that sank, that was very luxurious, that was the Empress of Ireland. And it was a real ship. It did sink. Many people died. Not as many as the Titanic. I had the numbers here somewhere. Doesn't matter. Over 1,000 people died.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, Jules Demont, is the podcaster before podcast begins. He's all in on the Empress of Ireland.
Yes.
So Dirk is there to get some knowledge from him.
He has all the history. Talks about how the Empress was built for the CN Railway. I'm not sure if that was true or not.
You know, never mind. We don't have to look into it. Let's just go with that.
Okay. I had a whole aside about how my grandpa worked for the CN Railway, along with the CPR and the BN, but that's not that interesting. My grandpa just worked for all the railways.
That's pretty interesting. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. It was a grandpa story.
That's fine. But they do talk about how it crashed. So it hit a boat called the Storstadt, and the two boats could see each other just fine, like from 8 miles away, 6 miles away, 4 miles away. They're like, okay, you're over here, I'm over here. And then a fog bank rolled in, and the Empress got nervous, is like, okay, well, there's all this fog, so we're just going to cut the engines. So they cut the engines and they drifted. And the Storstadt was like, well, I can't see anything, but I'll assume they kept going on their course, so I'll go on mine. So the Storstadt keeps going, and the Empress drifts right in front of it, and it gets T-boned the same way I did.
Oh.
It's T-boned the boat, and it fell over.
Far more casualties in this Storstadt was a cargo ship, right? It wasn't a passenger ship.
Yeah, that one had like 17 people on it.
Oh, yeah, just crew. And it was a catastrophe.
Yep. They only recovered 88 bodies, and he says, like, the other 700 men are still at the bottom of the St. Lawrence.
And I've read some of the, and this happens in a lot of naval disasters, so you might have heard this in relation to other sea deaths. The cork in the life vest was rotten, and come to proper weight, a little lead dust was sprinkled in each one.
I'm sorry, did you just say lead dust?
Well, lead pellets.
Your life preserver is made of lead. Don't you feel safe?
Aren't you lucky?
Well, because it has to come to a certain weight when the inspector comes, because this is after the Titanic.
Yeah.
So they're looking at that stuff now. Each life vest has to weigh a certain amount. Cork degrades. So you gotta lie. It's fraud. Basic fraud.
That's worse than waterlogged. Jesus.
You get waterlogged and mob death. You know, it's like having your shoes in cement.
Also, small quibble, but it stuck in my craw from when they were on the Doodlebug underwater. Jules Demat in Canada, the French historian for all things Empress, uses feet, not meters. So
wow.
The Canadians are using feet and gallons, and the Americans are using meters. And Dirk is like angry at that. I'm confused.
Cats and dogs living together. This is how people get caught plagiarizing things, or what's the word? Forgeries. There's some guy who, a Mormon guy, who would forge documents. To be fair, most of Mormon documents are forged or creatively
acquired,
escorted into life. I mean, he was supposed to have John Smith documents, and he used like a bit of phrase, or like he made a G the way they didn't make G's back then. Like, what you don't know is going to get you in trouble.
That's how they get you. Thanks to a video I saw. Do you listen to Sif Pod at all? Secretly, incredibly fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know that Alex puts out a whole bunch of like short videos on this, like, here's 1 minute worth of fun facts. And he put out one on the ampersand and the history of the ampersand and how it's mutated over the years and how it was just the letters E and T squished together. And then it got more squished and more squished and more squished over the years until now it's the weird shape that you know it as. But you can tell when something was printed based on what the ampersand looks like and which country it was printed in.
That's fascinating.
Secretly, incredibly fascinating.
I guess because if you're all distorting it at different rates.
Yeah.
They did the same thing for strawberries. They found a spy through strawberry seeds in the 1500s in France. They're like, oh, you couldn't have. How did you get these seeds in your garden? You must have gone to the other side. Like, it was caught by agriculture kind of a deal.
Early forensics.
Dirk Pitt comes across a gas station attendant who's also into trains in this area.
Now we're at chapter 30, so he's back in New York. Chapter 29, he's investigating the boat crash. Chapter 30, he's investigating the train crash.
Yes. This time he's talking to a gas station attendant. This guy's not a hitman. He's just an actual gas station attendant, unlike the other conversation with other characters. And he speaks like a lunatic. This guy is raving about, he sees the Manhattan Limited all the time. The spectral locomotive.
Oh, yeah, the ghost train, yeah.
And I love that this takes place in Coxsackie, New York, which is famous for being the home of a skin disease. Ooh, Coxsackie.
I knew I'd heard that name before.
Hey, it's what kids get at daycare.
Nice. Terrible name, but nice.
Ringworm. It's like ringworm.
Yeah. And he's looking for the ghost town of Wackature. Is it called Wackature?
Wackature.
Because I'm on the audiobook, and it just sounds like Wackature.
Spelled in, how to this, it doesn't matter. I read it as Wackature, Shire.
It's like Worcestershire sauce.
Yes, which is a great sauce to have around when kids are learning to read. I guess, or adults for that matter. Really destroys their confidence, that bottle.
Why is it pronounced that way?
They're British. Just ignore them.
It's the ampersand. It's the noises got squished and squished.
Oh, yeah. Worcester sauce.
And eventually, if you squish the English language enough, you sound like you're from New Zealand. Hi, New Zealand.
If you're like me, you find it very hard to keep your dick dry.
We're going to keep mentioning New Zealand until we're number one down there, damn it.
Did you watch Amazing Stories growing up? It was a Steven Spielberg joint. There was one about a spectral locomotive.
It sounds familiar, but I couldn't tell you. Might not have had that in Canada.
Might not have, but ghost trains are... I saw that as a child. It made an impression on me. I love ghost trains. Ghost trains, ghost ship, I'm here for it.
Everyone loves ghost trains.
You're a man of science. What kind of study did you do?
Well, I have to make sure that the bridges can hold ghost trains as well as real trains.
Well, thank goodness. I'm glad they take it seriously. Pitt kind of baffled by this, and then Pitt has a interaction with this ghost train. I'm out of words for synonyms for ghost. I've got ghost, spectral, spooky.
He has a near train experience, and I like how he's standing on the rails, and he can't go over the siding on one side because it's dark and he doesn't know what's down there. He can't go over the siding on the other side because down there's the river. So there's like five paragraphs of him being terrified, and he hasn't been scared like this since the Mediterranean caper when he was doing all that night swimming, fantasizing about sharks and the existential dread of life. And he has a real panic attack right now, so he charges the oncoming train. Like, I can't go left, I can't go right. I'm going to fight this train head on. And it disappears.
So he's just got a lot of leftover trauma from all his life and all the head injuries.
I was going to say, all the head injuries from the previous book, which was only 2 months ago. Maybe 3 months ago? 3 months ago. When he attacked the USS Iowa with his face.
Oh, yes. Like a mongrel. Dive in face first. And then he goes on, after this encounter, which he brushes off completely. He's just like, a ghost went through me. I'm fine. No further inspection needed.
That was so wacky. That probably didn't happen.
Probably early onset dementia. It's probably something that Al slipped into his drink to finally make things happen. I don't know.
My guess was Zeri.
And he goes from that to a sculptor's house, and the sculptor is really worried about his privacy.
Oh, yeah. In the previous chapter, the guy at the gas station talks about how, you know, Wakature is a ghost town. There's nothing up there except a crazy old man who makes statues. And we meet the crazy old man who makes statues.
And he's telling Dirk, I'll talk to you, man, but you can't blow up my spot. Dirk's like, you famous sculptor.
You better not be a reporter.
And I love this world where there's ghost trains and famous sculptor people that are being hounded by the press.
Yeah.
I get Andy Warhol of a shot. He was a painter. He did a sculpture here and there. It can be a dangerous thing to be an artist. It's not commonly dangerous. Not everybody's Salman Rushdie. If you're making sculptures of, like, naked ladies or turtles or wombats or whatever, nobody cares. Even if they're great.
Yeah, they don't really say what the sculptures are about, but they just talk about his house as in, like, it's a resin statue-filled museum. But I'm trying to think, like, of what? Because based on this guy being, like, huge and cantankerous, I was imagining the glassblower Chihuly, who is a huge cantankerous man with an eye patch, who hates people and reporters, yells at kids who want to talk to him, but produces this amazing, impossible artwork. The grumpiest man.
Yes, Chihuly Glass. Has ever been to a casino and seen large glass flowers? Those are Chihuly Glass.
Yep. We saw his exhibition in Seattle. And that was great because my kids were a lot smaller, so they were running around. And every time they would like start sprinting towards a display, you could see two guards immediately start sprinting. But my kids would always stop, like they knew not to attack the glass, but they were setting the guards off pretty good.
I felt that in my spine. Power, go Hearts.
My kids are just fast, but they respect art. It's okay.
My son is just, he's respectful. He just doesn't have the body wherewithal or like physical management. So he's not trying to be bad, but he'll stand too close to something. And he's every museum we've been to, he set up an alarm. And one museum, the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, three alarms. Three alarms.
That's a good day.
It's a sensitive they have very sensitive security around their pedestals.
His picture's by the front door. Do not admit this child.
It wasn't because he was uncontrollable or naughty or I let my kids go wild. It is just like he'll do an arm movement out of nowhere and it'll break the plane over the velvet rope.
My kids would do that in stores, not museums, thank God. But I know one time we were in some antique shop and all the shelves are glass, but it's those shelves where you just put the piece of glass on the shelf and it has clips to hold it up. So my kid would like put his hand under the glass and go, oh, neat. And he just tapped it up and misaligned it. And then the glass fell through and the antique tea set fell through and shattered. The lady who owns the place was just like, well, you're paying for that. I know. Anyway.
But I have to tell the sculptor he's not going to leak his name and location to the press for
yes.
Sculptor Paparazzi.
He's just interested in the Manhattan Express. Sorry, the Manhattan Limited?
Manhattan Limited, yes. Express Limited? It can be both. But this guy lives in the old station. He rehabbed it, and now it's an elegant mix of polycarbonate lines and what was the word? Formica. So he's got red and white formica throughout the house. Elegant, state of the art.
And he's recreated Sam Harding's office perfectly, just the way it was. Because Ansel McGee, the sculptor, is also a historian of, I guess, that specific night. They talk about the guy who robbed the place. They talk about how he was identified but never found.
Yeah, this guy has a very niche hobby here, to be a historian, not just for trains, but for one train on one night.
Yep.
It's very particular.
How does Pitt find these people?
What do you get this guy for Christmas that he doesn't already have?
I was going to say a train, but they also established that he has a train and a half mile of track he built himself that he just goes back and forth on it with his grandkids, which I thought was kind of neat.
That would be neat. But yes, his white formica room was like his house, and then he takes him to the station, which is also a part of the house that's been completely restored and is still tasteful and not formica. I don't want to cast aspersions on the people in 1914 that are fictional in this book. They had a classy station, not like the McDonald's hospital part of the structure that this guy built.
One issue I have with this part is they talk about the ghost train. Pitt like talks about how, have you seen or heard any reports of this ghost train? Ansel McGee is like, that's ridiculous. There's no such thing as ghost trains. I've never seen or heard anything. When the ghost train went by the house an hour ago, that's why Pitt is here.
Yes, but if it's still a ghost train, how you're going to go argue ghost with somebody? No, I saw a ghost. It was just here.
But it was loud and bright.
Okay, prove it. So it was a stroke, but only for blocking it.
Good comparison. Okay.
And Dirk also spies a poster on the wall, an original poster of a woman holding lots of beers, and he describes her as a...
overripe?
Overripe girl.
I remember that specific use of word.
Does that mean the model picture is too old to be the model, or she has bad arthritis?
I figured he was going for an hourglass description.
Yes.
But it's still a weird word. Squishy and wrinkly?
It is icky.
Covered in fruit flies.
Oh, we saw this show about old-timey jobs with this British presenter. He does old, terrible jobs. And one of them was a ratter. You stick your hand into dark places and you pull out rats. And you do it into hay bales. So you don't see, your arm disappears and you come out with a rat.
Fun.
Unlocked a terror in me when I saw that. I didn't know I had.
So that's like the UK equivalent of a hillbilly hand fishing.
Yeah, and that reminded me of this. Enjoying overripe posters. And the Prime Minister's wife, Danielle Savereau.
Yes, chapter 32.
It's coming at us. Savereau, is that how it's pronounced in the book? Because boy, does he like to give us names that just really need consonants.
Sarvo.
Sarvo. Okay, it's all vowels.
Oh, yeah.
Every vowel.
I blame the French.
She's at the hospital. She greets the premier, Jules Guerrier. There's 87 letters in this name.
Jules Guerrier. Yeah.
Guerrier. And they're at the hospital to see her husband, the prime minister, see how he's doing. The thing that stuck out to me was the nurse takes their hats and coats.
I saw that. Yeah, this is a nice full-service hospital.
Exactly. A great use of a nurse's time there.
May I take your hat and coat? May I get you a drink?
They go in to see the Prime Minister, and Prime Minister Savro seems to bluff, or he calls him out. Gruyere is like, we need to free Quebec. The wounded president or prime minister is like, fine, I'm sick of it. You killed 50 people on a plane. You keep whining about it. You got it.
Get out of here, Jesus.
We'll start the divorce, but it's like, it's going to be a divorce. You're not keeping the good stuff. You're not keeping our mail or our money.
You have to print your own money. All trade deals with all the provinces will be renegotiated. All federal offices will be withdrawn. Customs inspections will be erected along all the borders. And Gary is like, well, that's a little harsh, don't you think?
It is very.
Dude, you're a separate country now. Or at least you're going to be.
It's very Brexit-y. Like,
that's why I called the room that we're in right now on Zencastr is Quebexit.
Remember when Brexit happened? We were on the road in South Carolina, and the news came on, and we're like, well, that's interesting. I wonder what that means for the presidential election. Because that was when Hillary and Trump were coming into the home stretch.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, probably doesn't mean anything. Nah.
What country is Michigan?
I would say China.
It isn't.
Guerriere is kind of struck by the severity of this. He's like, you're just saying yes? Prime Minister's like, yes, but everything gets cut off.
I didn't think you'd say yes. Shit, what do I do now?
Yes, he's the dog that caught the car.
It does have that vibe.
And now he's really... And with the ramifications.
And then in my notes, they spend some time, at least Jules Guerrier spent some time reminiscing about the good old days of French colonialism when the fleur-de-lis flew in 100 colonies worldwide.
All right, Jules, is this all we need? More decor? So if we flag the place up, people live?
Patriotism, nationalism. Look, we have our cool flag. We're a better country now. Your flag has maple leaves on it.
You break it down, it's all labor disputes and decor. The whole problem. People want a nice view, and they want stuff done for them.
Mm-hmm. And the people who vote for the referendum, I don't think are going to like what happens, if Brexit was any indication.
I think you are correct there. But word gets back to Henry Vaughan, and he is furious.
Yes.
He's yelling at Danielle, who's, I guess, filled him in on this new arrangement. He's like, this won't work. The Soviets will back out. They'll abandon all the commitments. We don't have time. This is too fast. We'll be a leaderless movement. We'll collapse.
I guess their plan was for at some point in the future for Vaughan to be the head of Quebec, and then they separate. But if they separate with Guerrier in charge, he's just going to be like a big fat nobody who will do whatever Canada says.
Yes, they wanted to foment revolution. They didn't want a fully baked revolution.
We're doing it peacefully. Shit.
Some light traitor stuff. Just light.
Danielle tells him to just like dump the FQS and then run against Guerrier in the first election. And Vaughan's like, nah, I'll just kill him.
Yeah, well, that does tie it up easy.
Murder solves all problems.
Remember a couple of chapters ago, we had Foscali, who we'll come up to again, working at a gas station. And you're like, the gas station attendant is dead in the booth.
Yep.
This guy is committed to getting a job. And killing people to make it easier for himself. That's his version of easy. That's his character's version. That's Clive's version. It's just easier if they assume a whole technical career and we kill somebody rather than, you know, bribe them.
Yeah, the next chapter is all Foscli and we get a really good look into his mind.
Yes. This is like the movie FX, which was a long, long, long time ago and had lots of Mylar. But it was awesome. It was about a guy who did TV special effects, and as a kid, it was mind-blowing. In Foscli is this guy times 1,000. He's got the putty. He's got mineral spirits. He's got some kind of special glue, and he shaved off his eyebrows, which is a commitment. Because yep. You look unsettling when you don't have eyebrows. Not you, but like a person.
As I called it several chapters ago, he makes himself look just like Henri Vaughan.
Yes, new nose, new eyebrows. And the shaved eyebrows. Now he looks like Henry Vaughan completely. And he goes about his dastardly plan. And he's got to sneak into Gruyere's house, the premier, the Quebec Inn?
Yes.
Quebecistan? Quebec? Quebeconian?
It's not separate yet, but yeah. He's the head, whereas I guess you would have governors, we have premiers. But he doesn't even sneak in. He goes up, he knocks on the front door, and security's like, oh, Mr. Villon, welcome.
Well, he's sneaking in that he's under subterfuge. He's not just walking in through the front door being false guy.
He does sneak up on Guerrier, though, in the very next scene, which is great.
False Glide. This motherfucker Cussler is just throwing rural jurors at us left and right in this book with names.
I don't know. False Glide is a great name. It's memorable. And by the end of the chapter, the character is pretty memorable, too.
It is. It is a memorable name, but it sounds like a condition.
It does.
Like, Sandals, he's got false glide.
I got a bad case of false glide, but I got lotion for it now.
Yes, exactly. So he's in his full getup. As if clowns are in full makeup, they call it the full yama-yama. So he's in the full yama-yama of disguise.
Yes. He gets past the security. He goes upstairs to have a meeting with Guerrier. But he sneaks up on Guerrier because Guerrier is watching TV. Because Henri Villon is on TV live giving a speech at an art center.
And when he sees the Henri Villon in his room, he just can't comprehend what's going on. His brain short circuits. He cannot spring into action, and he gets smothered by...
But you're here. But you're there. What's going on? Oh, my goodness.
But he... But you can't... Oh, my medication.
And then he kills him with a pillow.
There was the show that was on the air at this time called Candid Camera, and they would film people supposedly in...
You're on Candid Camera. I remember that.
One of them was a lady at a post office going to a P.O. box and getting her mail out, and the guy next to her is doing the same, except he's getting a package, and it's a long package. And it just, it's long, long. It just keeps coming out.
I loved those shows as a kid.
And it was such a simple, like... And she's standing there like, I can't believe my, like, I don't understand what my eyes are telling me here. And that is what Gruyere is having right here. Right before he gets smothered by the pillow, which is the way to die.
Uh-huh. Because it takes him a full half minute to die, I guess. There's a lot of description about his lungs burning and then lights going off in his head. And then False Gly, who is a professional, keeps the pillow there for 3 more minutes just to make sure.
He really does have attention to detail. I've got to hand it to him. Not just 30 seconds and you stop putting pressure. You keep that pressure on.
Oh, yeah. They'll fake it otherwise.
Listeners, no. Don't. You put down the pillow.
This is the podcast that does not endorse the cool crime of murder.
Unless you really, really have to kill somebody. But,
but the very next thing that happens, I'm not sure if I have issues with or not. Just because I don't deal with enough corpses to find out. But False Gly wants to make sure that the coroner, the inquest, doesn't say that this was a murder. It has to be like, you know, he died in his sleep. So he breaks out a makeup kit and covers up the bruises inside Guerrier's mouth. Now, if I was a coroner, I would wonder why there was makeup inside this guy's mouth.
That's what I would wonder, too. Especially, it's not, he just died. It's not dry.
Yeah.
Makeup really doesn't adhere. Whether it's the waxy makeup like a lipstick or a powder makeup, doesn't adhere to wet surfaces. So I don't know what kind of elixir he's got here to... Maybe Mac has a special line for recent corpses? Don't know. I had an expert, a dead person expert. It's my daughter. Used to be watched by the neighbor lady, and she put makeup on corpses for the funeral parlors. So my daughter has seen lots of corpses get makeup put on them. And the massaging is right, but you have to like dig. Tissue massage, like get your elbow into it to get the face to sit where it is.
Mm-hmm. Because once the muscles stiffen, I guess you can just kind of push them around.
Yeah, and this chapter actually was quite eye opening. I didn't know she saw that much when she was like 3.
Yeah,
with the neighbor lady.
That's not creepy at all.
I don't neglect my children terribly. I just. I'm kidding. My neighbor is fantastic, and death is part of life, and I knew she was going.
Yes.
I didn't know she'd remember all of it, but she remembers all of it.
But after that, he heads downstairs, says like, oh, Guerrier went to bed, so I'm just going to let myself out. Thank you for this. Like, make sure the security guards see him leaving. Make sure they see the Mercedes. He drives the Mercedes a couple of blocks, dumps it, and then hops on a bus back into town.
He drops the Mercedes eight blocks away. He's like, it's a rich neighborhood. They're not going to call up the police on this Mercedes for like weeks.
But on the bus ride back in, he thinks about how he has like this super communist poison that he was planning on using, but using the pillow was just a win because he's just that kind of weird, sadistic serial killer. He doesn't have a pattern. And he thinks about how awesome he is that he doesn't have a pattern. But now I'm wondering if the super communist poison is going to come back at some point.
It would have to. Chekhov's poison, right? You don't mention it.
I wrote down Chekhov's super communist poison.
Oh, Chekhov's super communist poison. Much better.
Thank you for understanding Chekhov.
But he's so deep in character now. He goes to make a sneaky visit to Danielle as Henry Gallant. Yes. Really, everything. And he takes you to my favorite place, which is Pound Town. And I say that's my favorite place. I'm sex positive for everyone else. I'm sex negative for me. Just leave me alone. But this lady and Foss get to it, but she thinks he's Henry Gallant. He just put makeup on his face. There's no other distinguishing character. Like, people look very different from the neck down.
No, there are definitely some distinguishing differences. She does note that his maleness smells different. His lovemaking was more brutal, and he feels differently inside of her, to which I wrote, "Oh, Lord Christ." But none of this, like, sinks in. Like, boy, like, every single part of him physically and mentally is different. That's odd.
There's no scars, chest hair. I saw a guy the other day, he had hair on his shoulders. I was like, that could happen. I didn't like it. I was just like, I didn't know that could happen.
He's exactly as bald and exactly as jacked as Villon.
No.
Did the nose putty not come off? Like, if you're having evil sex with the wife of the prime minister of a country and your nose putty stays on, I still don't think you're doing it right.
I don't think so. At least she's not getting the right side of anything. That nose needs to be put under pressure.
But she was happy with it regardless.
Or at least happy enough that she wasn't going to question it.
Yeah.
She's like, one naked man as good as another. I still contend. I've never... Some men have pepperoni nipples. Some men have, like, eraser nipples. Really?
I'm uncomfortable now.
The way people walk. Mr. Gly really must know his stuff. He had a dossier, and he must have done an awesome job, or this lady needs glasses.
Yeah. He is the super competent ultra assassin. And I think this might be the first time Clive has, like, written much from the point of view of the villain, and he's having a lot of fun with this guy. Villon's just, like, a dick and a commie, but Foss Gly, he's, like, evil psychopath, likes murdering, knows he's a psychopath. I'm the best serial killer.
His attention to detail is fantastic. He doesn't want a pattern.
Actually,
so it's a new show. It's a new show every time he does it.
From Titanic, I can't remember what his name was, but he was the agent with Russian intelligence, who we kept calling the Russian Dirk Pitt.
Oh, yes.
That was a villain, but that was like an intellectual, refined villain. This guy just murders people with pillows, even though he has poison, because he can't. This is a crazy villain. I'm having fun with the crazy villain. The story's not gripping me so much in this book, but I am liking the characters.
Right, I do like the characters. Foss Gly is the best character so far. Danielle, I am intrigued by. Really? No questions, bitch? Nothing? No. They're the same exact height.
Okay, Clive doesn't write smart women. Because just think...
Oh, yes.
A few chapters ago with Heidi. Think about Heidi. Not one question, Heidi, about this.
Just figured that was man's POV. Like, naturally, she likes older men. She'll get in the car.
Yeah, just... Some really good sex overrides all the higher brain functions.
And yes, he kills Gly. I forgot to mention in the previous chapter when Danielle was talking to Henry Villon, she was like, in order to get this done the way we want it, because it's happening so fast, Quebec Premier has to go. Gruyere has to go.
Yeah.
And that's why Gly was sent there. Then he does, I think, he does a dirty to his boss who hired him, Henry Villon, by going in seducing Danielle and then dumping her ass. So the real Henry Gallant is out there, not knowing.
Yeah, he has no idea what just happened.
Super crushed. Foss Gly has sex with Danielle and then just tears her to pieces, like emotionally, self-esteem-wise. He's like, you dumb bitch, I don't need you. Never contact me again.
Yeah, the moment seemed right. Call me old-fashioned, but I like a dump to be as memorable as it is devastating.
And she is shook by this. She calls him a bastard. She throws something at him while he leaves, and he laughs all the way.
Yeah.
And I would too, because this is hilarious, because her boyfriend's out there not knowing this happened.
Definitely going to be some fun arguments in the next couple of chapters. There's a lot more chaos in this than I expected.
It is a very different book than the Titanic book. It's much better, I think. What do you think?
I think so. On the one hand, if you took Dirk out of this story, everything that's happened would still have happened the same way. Dirk has so far just been along for the ride. But on the other hand, there's a lot more moving pieces with this book. We've got like three or four separate plots happening because we have the separation of Quebec. We have the fact that the hydropower station has power over the United States. There's all that oil in Quebec now. The American president is going to like devalue the dollar and get impeached. There's a terrorist group. There's a $680 million boondoggle, which I guess they kind of solved by shooting a torpedo at it. There's the North American treaty, and Dirk Pitt is still mostly focused on dealing with the PhD thesis notes of his on-again, off-again girlfriend. We're halfway through. There's so much happening.
There's no way I've ever been able to get a man to help me with homework. I would never handjay my notes. He's a math guy. So it would be like, put down your math things and look at my history of Wilson's presidency and tell me what you think. No. I guess Dirk Pitt's a little bit more naval-minded, so fine. Yeah. But he's still not going to do your homework for you, lady. Why'd you give him all of your notes?
I know. That was just basically so Brian Shaw would have to track down Pitt to get them.
Well, of course. Speed of plot.
Yeah.
But does a grown woman really think another grown man's going to have the time and the patience? And for some reason, she was right. Dirk Pitt will do anything to avoid intimacy. So he will finish her piece for her.
I found a corpse for you, my dear.
But it was very tastefully made up, the corpse.
No, it was decomposing. The Essex corpse.
What? The new corpse was very well made up.
Oh, yeah. The new corpse was lovely. The old corpse was pretty rough.
Yes.
But the old corpse had the book that has all the answers that Heidi needs.
Well, I spoke to my old friend because I had remembered her with the when she had to go visit her super and he was dead.
Oh, geez.
She said, and I've never smelled this, she was 8 or 9. The door was open because he always had the door unlocked for people to come in and shout because he couldn't hear. So she knew when she poked her head in by the smell. The smell was scary, she said, and she went to get her mom.
I'll believe it. I don't think there's anything quite like that.
This podcast got to tear open a visceral traumatic wound for one of my friends, and I did that.
No, we're true crime. Awesome. We'll be even more popular.
He died of natural causes. He was just found by a child.
I know.
It's not like Sarah. Do you know Sarah Silverman's story?
No.
She was seeing a child psychiatrist because she was a bedwetter. Her parents would just drop her off and watch her go into the building and be back in an hour. She found her psychiatrist because he hung himself in the office.
Whoa.
And her parents were back in an hour.
Whoa.
That's
why she's like that. Okay.
She had great parents, and you're wondering what makes a person. Oh, there's sometimes an external event that just comes in.
That's rough. Dang.
Makes you a comedian. Well, we've done an hour 14. I think that's pretty good right here.
That seems to be our sweet spot for recording, because I can get that down to about 50 minutes.
Oh.
And that's all the notes I have. It's been a crazy week. It's been a crazy weekend. We have just exactly gotten to where I've got notes for, so this worked out perfectly. I meant to do that.
You skated right to the edge there.
Yeah. All right. So I think we'll call that quits for today.
Well, hope you feel better. Do you have a humidifier?
I do have a humidifier. We have a house full of humidifiers.
Okay.
Because some gene that me and my wife have created with our children means all three of our kids get nosebleeds if the weather does anything, and one kid gets them constantly. And the doctors have like poked around in there, and they're like, well, we could cauterize it, but then you'll lose half your sense of smell, and you might still get nosebleeds. Okay, well, that's helpful. Thanks. So we have a lot of humidifiers just to keep the nosebleed level down.
We just don't have any immune system in this house, so I have humidifiers in the hopes that our mucous membranes remain somewhat efficient, but it never works. There is a new strep going around, so if your exterior throat gets itchy, that's a new symptom of a new strep. Enjoy.
I just have a lot of sniffles I'm going to have to edit out of this podcast.
Along with my pen clicks, because I can't control my and I'm sorry.
I was going to ask you if you kept that up while you were talking, if you're like, could you please put the pen down? If you click when I'm talking, that's fine, because I can edit that out. But it's hard to edit that out when it's in the middle of you saying, like, butts or something.
I am a child, an infant that needs a pacifier, and I'm sorry.
That's okay. I've been playing with a Leatherman the whole time, but it's quiet, so.
And it's a multi-tool. Multitask.
All right.
The microphones worked.
I'll let you go. Ooh, right. Microphones. I'm going to start editing and see how we sound.
Feel better.
Have a good day, and we'll see you next week, everyone.
Bye.
This has been Kustler Hustlers. Your hosts have been Topper and Nancy. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Kustler Hustlers.